This is the Animal's Eye View podcast, and I'm your host, Lizanne Flynn. There's a statement by Chief Joseph, I believe, of the Nez Perce, which goes something like, "Every single animal knows more than you do." And it's a quote that I'm fond of using, sometimes with mixed reception, as you might imagine, if humans hear that from time to time, because as humans, and perhaps maybe even on our own consciousness, we kind of like to perceive that we're, you know, know-it-alls, that we're kind of on top of everything. And I don't think that anything could be further from the truth. And as a matter of fact, I know that it's not that way. I've been seeing a couple of articles recently. If you're a long-time listener, maybe even a short-time listener of this podcast, you know that that's kind of how I roll. I see something that piques my interest or my curiosity, and so it usually ignites some sort of response on my part. Hopefully, by the time it makes it to the podcast, I attempt to temper it because, and I try to keep it positive, I really do. It's just that I admit freely that it's probably maybe even going to be a lifelong for the rest of my planetary experience in struggling to be that bridge of perhaps neutral compassion between humans and all the other species on the planet. But honestly, there are some times when I just want to, you know, slap our species upside the head because we make these kind of really ridiculous statements, and statements where perhaps if you were looking from the outside of human experience, you might go, "Huh, well that was an interesting and a curious thing to say." The thing that I saw on social media, the article that I happened to see was about, and you may very well have seen it, and you might even Google it. I'll see if I can find the link to the video, and I'll put it in the podcast notes on Buzzsprout. And it was a video of a group of dogs, and probably presumably wild dogs, in China. And the video was, I don't know, maybe 10 or 15 seconds long. It wasn't that long. And there were four dogs that were clustered around a fifth dog. And apparently the video showed that these four dogs were kind of holding an area, a space around this fifth dog that apparently right before the video started rolling had been hit by a car. And the fifth dog lying on the pavement wasn't moving. And the article was going on to say that, you know, perhaps the dogs were standing there and they would nuzzle their companion every so often, and perhaps they didn't know what it had just occurred, which of course makes my internal response to something like that be something similar to maybe Vesuvius going off, because of course they know what had happened. And my response to the person who posted it, and to be fair, I think the original poster was saying, "Isn't this a wonderful thing that dogs are that empathetic for another of their own species, and frankly for our own species as well, that when one of us is hurt or injured, like hopefully a companion animal, would hold space for us and would look to us to be able to maybe if not seek help on our own, to have them go off and seek help for us. At the very least, they would be holding space for us and kind of protecting us and maybe not letting anyone else near who is going to cause us harm again." And that kind of thinking to me is just kind of beyond the pale. That somehow other species on the planet, and let's just stick with animals for the time being. We're not going to get into plants. We're not going to get into all the other sentient beings on the planet. We'll just stick with animals, and that makes sense, of course, because the name of the podcast is The Animal's Eye View. I think that, and most certainly, as I've talked before, in connecting with my own clients, most definitely there have been times when there has been quite a bit of surprise, dare I say shock, when an awareness or a thought or an observation, a perception comes forth from someone's companion animal that they're like, wow, they're aware of that. They know when I do that. And again, I think as humans, we're just so, I don't know whether the word to use is pitifully unaware of how all other species of the planet are aware, that maybe locked in our own consciousness, which admittedly that we are, of what humans are doing, and we kind of see ourselves at the top of the heap and the whole thing. And I was watching actually earlier today, and I have to say, if my cable TV service gave me the channel Animal Planet, I literally would not get anything done because, of course, I would watch it all 24 hours a day if I could, at the very least, probably more than like maybe 3 to 4 hours a day. Anyway, and I want to say at the offset before I get started on this part of animals knowing just a heck of a lot more than any human on the planet could ever think they do, I am not a fan of zoos. I do understand that there are people who perceive that there's a conservation aspect that is part and parcel of zoos, and perhaps somehow that kind of makes it okay. To me, you probably are not likely ever to convince me of that. When I see a zoo, I see heretofore animal in the wild that is now not in the wild, and I understand that there's all sorts of enrichment activities, quote unquote, that are going on for these particular animals. The bottom line is that they're not in Africa, that they're not in Asia, that they're not in New Zealand, that they're not in Australia, that they're not in the wilds of North America. They are likely in an urban setting. They're likely in what I'm hearing now are concrete jungles. And we, of course, perceive that for some humans, cities are concrete jungles. And I think probably animals see them very much the same. And on this particular Animal Planet show, they were having to euthanize a member of a certain species. And it was really interesting to me, and it kind of reminded me that just this last week I was having a conversation with a colleague about how her companion animal at home was doing. Because, being an animal communicator, occasionally people will, just ask me a one and done, and I'm always happy to help people. I figure that that's part of why I'm here on the planet, and so I'm happy to oblige, especially when a colleague needs some support and some assistance with their companion animals. And at the end of this conversation, it was really clear that this particular companion animal, the phrasing that came forward was, "What are you waiting for?" to my colleague, the woman that I was talking with. And she said, "Oh, well," she said, "if that's how it's going to be, then maybe at the end of this week we'll just put her to sleep." And it caught me so off guard because, quite frankly, I look at that as being a little bit of, at least in my world, you know how it is, it's your world and you live it, and it's so everything is normal there. That putting another being to sleep is a bit of an antiquated, probably, expression to use. And so I looked at her and I said, "You mean euthanize her?" And she repeated again, she said, "Well, yeah," she said, "putting her to sleep." And not a coincidence, this Animal Planet show that I was watching about, life behind the scenes, as a matter of fact, at a particular zoo, and the member of this particular species animal group was, in fact, also going to have to be euthanized because her health was failing. There was some sort of GI involvement. She wasn't getting nutrition from the foods. She had a massive kind of internal infection going on. And so they had made the decision to, their words, put her to sleep. And so I was really struck by that because I think often for humans, we look at euthanasia as being, and I don't know whether maybe it's the power behind that, the inherent power of choosing whether or not another being on the planet continues to be in their experience. And full disclosure, I have euthanized several animals in my lifetime, and each and every single time it was a really heart-wrenching and not necessarily avoiding, but definitely a heart-wrenching experience in that all of the emotions were coming forward. The emotion and the thought of, did I wait too long? Do they want to stay here a little bit longer? Yes, even as an animal communicator, I've had those same sort of struggles. At the same time, I don't think we as humans do ourselves any favor to use a euphemism such as putting them to sleep. I understand that we probably feel a lot comfortable with just like, oh, well, you know, we're just going to put them to sleep. And perhaps maybe the sleeping part of that comes from what usually is a dual step in the euthanasia process, in, as a matter of fact, the animal is heavily sedated before the final drug, which stops the heart in beating and ceases all bodily function, is given. So perhaps maybe that's where it comes from. But it was really clear, at least for both of these connected yet separate human interaction and animal interaction situations, that there was kind of a feeling of the staff in the zoo and my colleague being a lot more comfortable with, oh, well, we're just putting them to sleep. And I don't think that that really allows a human to understand and to fully grasp and to really fully encounter the act of what I consider to be the ultimate act of compassion and mercy, which is to end the suffering of an animal being on this planet. I look at it as we are, after all, the ultimate stewards. And just like that group of dogs earlier, the other comment that I made on the Facebook post was, it's clear that they were empathetically holding space, literally, for their friend that whose life had been cut short by getting hit by a car. And I think equally so that there were some comments of, well, maybe they didn't know what was happening. My response was, they're likely waiting for another human who they understand and know and embrace as being the ultimate stewards of the planet to come along and help them. I don't think this is a case of them not taking an action and being able to say, oh, well, yeah, good old Bert. Bert's gone now, and we're just going to stand around here for a while because we don't have anything better to do. Again, my perception is, and in connecting with those particular animals, there was most definitely a feeling and an awareness of, well, we're going to wait for a human to come along, and maybe they'll help us with this. With the staff at the zoo, there were also some conversations of when this particular member of this family group of, it happened to be herd animals, was going to be euthanized, that they allowed the euthanasia and performed the euthanasia in an open space separated by a fence, but certainly the other members of that family group were allowed to be there and were allowed to watch and were allowed to, I would like to say, stand witness to this really powerful exiting of an animal experience. And it was interesting, though, that as part of this program, there were a couple of the zookeepers that came on that said, "Oh, I don't think they should be allowed to watch it." Another zookeeper said, "I don't think they understand what's going on." When I'm confronted with the lack of insight, quite frankly, and I know that that probably sounds judgmental, and I guess at this point in my experience, and probably one from where I'm looking at the overall functioning of the planet, we don't really have any more time to waste with pretty words and nice language. I was really dumbfounded that, especially with the zookeepers, that these particular humans who have charged themselves with basically being ultimate stewards of these animals in the wild, that although they might not have been directly responsible for their capture and basically, frankly, animal napping from their own particular habitat, they necessarily are putting themselves in charge of not only conservation and the caretaking of these individual animals, but they also orchestrate things for them such as procreation, where they introduce male and female of the same species, and there's lots of kind of double entendre talk about, well, maybe they'll take a shining to each other. There was a part of the program where eggs of a certain bird species were being removed so that they could be incubated in the zoo's incubator. And what was replaced for the animal was a wooden egg. And the statement from the zookeeper was, yeah, we just place it with a wooden egg and we really don't think that they know any difference. And in that moment, for that particular animal species, there was a flash of what that bird is doing is instinctual behavior. From that, their perspective, there is an object that is laying there that they understand came from their body. They do understand that when that egg was originally put there by them, exiting their physical body, that there was a live being in there. And so they would naturally just go ahead and let instinct take over and sit on that egg as if to incubate it. And probably, quite honestly, I don't know whether it makes a difference to that particular bird species that there's a wooden egg there, but to a certain extent, there was a little bit of an attempt on the part of the humans to kind of trick or to fool another sentient species. And so after then the egg gets to a certain point in the incubation period and is getting ready to hatch, what they do then is that they go out, they remove the wooden egg, and then they place that particular soon to be hatched egg underneath that particular bird species. And then they kind of continue to monitor how that chick is bonding with its bird mother. And there was a portion in the program, and I know I'm digressing, that talks about when rains come in this particular part of this zoo, that sometimes they have to keep an eye out for all these little baby birds of these certain species, that they don't basically get too cold, or they basically give up and they sink down into the mud, or they get lost in the water. And again, there was just kind of an overarching, I understand about the stated principles and objective, I guess, of conservation. There was most definitely also the same kind of overarching thought of wanting to avoid death as much as possible. Every single other animal species on the planet understands that at the same time they might be predator, they are also prey. They do understand that at certain times, members of their species, and perhaps maybe even young, that they have given birth to or have hatched or have otherwise come into a parenting relationship with, may not survive them. And for me, quite honestly, it brought up a little bit of how humans, as David Attenborough has stated openly, and I'll find that quote if I haven't quoted it before, that humans are a plague on the planet. We're the only species whose numbers have not been kept to a level in accordance with the reserves that are capable here on planet Earth, as regenerating continually as they happen to be. And again, I think there's a part of us, and this kind of again gets into the whole why we've developed religion, at least from my point of view, a place to keep our shadow. We've distanced ourselves from nature. We don't like to see the shadow of death. We don't like understanding that our own death will be coming at some point in time, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. I guess the bottom line is that I just don't think we do ourselves or the sentient beings with whom we share our very lives with, and in fact happen to be in care of, to think that they somehow don't know at least as much as we do, if not more, about the grand experiment that is life here on this planet. And maybe if we listened to them a little bit more and we understood their perspective, yeah, I think it might be a shock perhaps for some of the zookeepers to say they do understand what's happening. A family member of theirs is transitioning. Yes, they are going to grieve. And there's not really anything you can do about it. The most you can do about it is to hold space for them. Probably the worst thing you can do for them, which is part of what they started to do in this particular zoo situation, was to, well, we're just going to give them lots of hugs and lots of cuddles and lots of kisses and, lots of enrichment. In other words, kind of a diversion. And so I guess I would say to those humans, when was the last time that that worked really well? For a human, if they lost a family member, if you came up to them and said, this really horrible thing happened, but if you just kind of keep yourself busy, and oh gosh, look, let's take you out to dinner and let's take you out to breakfast and let's give you lots of hugs and lots of cuddles. And perhaps there may very well be people listening who go, well, sure, isn't that what you do when someone loses a family member? If you happen to be one of those people, I would invite you to think about the term holding space. In holding space, you actually step into the space, as uncomfortable as it is at times, for whoever you happen to be interacting with, and actually be in that space with them. If they are deeply grieving, allow their grief to settle within you as well. Allow them to share that with you. The same holds true for joy. If you're around someone who's having a particularly joyful moment, step into that place of joy with them. Allow them to share their joy with you and watch what happens. The magic of sharing empathy, of holding space, of compassion, that's the true meaning of the word compassion, to being with feeling with other beings on our planet. It's really a remarkable thing, and it's an extraordinary gift, no matter what being you happen to be sharing it with. Trust me on that one. I'm Lizanne Flynn, and this has been the Animal's Eye View podcast. I'll see you next time.